Recently, I was looking back at some notes on a book that I had spoken on a number of years ago. On pages 181, 182 of a hardback book entitled You Can Fight for Your Life, which was written by Dr. Lawrence Leshon. He died 2 years ago at the age of 100 after practicing as a clinical and research psychologist for more than 50 years. It's been a long time since I read the book, and I only have a few notes, but it concerns self-examination in one part of it, and that's something, of course, we always do every year prior to the Passover. In the past few weeks, we've heard messages about that and how to prepare. The questions Dr. Leshon lists in this particular area are pretty general in nature, but they tie in to a review that anyone can use in their life. He was looking at them as an important factor because he directed the questions basically to cancer patients that he was dealing with. And he thought that their answers may have helped uncover contributory factors as to why some people are susceptible to cancer. And it was important in that respect. Well, I'm going to look at all of these questions very briefly and see if it'll give us a chance to perhaps answer and see if there's any facet of our life that possibly could make us cancer prone based on his assessment of these different questions. They're fairly easy to remember. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. And of course, they're not only important with regard to cancer, but obviously, you know, it deals with other areas in a person's life as well. Some of these are certainly beyond our control. For example, we can't change our genetic makeup. That's in place from the time we're born. Also, there may be environmental factors where you're exposed to something either at home or on the job. My oldest daughter and I were talking a few months ago about three of her male cousins, three brothers, who have not been able to have children. And we didn't, you know, weren't able to understand, but, you know, they all grew up on a farm between Laconor and Mount Vernon, out where, over the years, a lot of pesticides and toxic sprays were sprayed on the flowers and the plants that are out in that area. And if any of you have been up to Laconor in the spring, and this is probably just about the time of the year, a lot of those are coming out, very beautiful area, but they've had to pay some prices for that beauty. And, you know, there's nothing that says exactly that that was what was, you know, responsible for their sterility, but that couldn't have been a factor. Well, anyway, here are the questions that Dr. Leshon asked in his book. Number one, am I able to express anger when I feel it most strongly? Am I able to express anger when I feel it most strongly? Well, we may ask, is anger wrong? Turn to Nehemiah 9, verse 16. Nehemiah 9, verse 16. I'm talking about the Israelites. But they and our fathers dealt proudly and hardened their necks and hearkened not to thy commandments and refused to obey, neither were mindful of thy wonders that thou didst among them, but hardened their necks and in their rebellion appointed a captain to return to their bondage. But you are a God ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, That implies that God can get angry, but he tempers that anger and that ability with kindness. Because if you continue in the verse, it says, "And of great kindness, and forsookest them not." Turn to the New Testament in Matthew. We'll continue. Matthew 5, verse 22. Matthew 5, 22. "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment." Which here shows there's nothing wrong with anger if the cause is legitimate and if it's warranted. Another scripture in the New Testament, Mark 3, verse 5. Mark 3, verse 5. And this is Jesus, it says, "When he had looked round about them," the Pharisees, he's talking about the Pharisees, "with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he saith unto the man, Stretch forth thy hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other." A similar type of example is found in John 5, verse 2. John 5, verse 2. "Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water, and whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. How many in this room are 38 or under, age-wise? Raise your hand. I just kind of have an idea. Well, quite a few. And I guess the rest of you would have to be over 38. Can you imagine those under 38 from the time of your birth being saddled and burdened with some kind of infirmity? It doesn't say here what it was, so we don't really know. But obviously, if he couldn't get off his bed and get into the pool or the water, he must not have had a very good ability to grasp or be able to use his arms and or his legs. So he had quite an infirmity. And the rest of you over 38, can you imagine going back to your first 38 years and having something like that in your life? Well, no wonder when Jesus saw him lie and knew that he'd been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, "Will thou be whole?" or "be made whole." And the impotent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool, but while I'm coming, another steppeth down before me." And Jesus saith unto him, "Rise, take up thy bed, and walk." And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked. On the same day was the Sabbath. So the Jews probably were Johnny on the spot out there with their scales weighing the bed to see if it was too heavy to carry on the Sabbath. Verse 10, "The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It's the Sabbath day. It isn't lawful for you to carry thy bed." 38 years he'd been in that situation. And they were looking at one event on one day. You know, it was incidents such as this that would make anyone angry because of the total lack of compassion these people exhibited. They were focusing on their interpretation of God's law to justify their behavior and the way they viewed this rather than being thankful for the miracle of healing that had just taken place. Turn over to Ephesians 4, verse 26. Ephesians 4, verse 26. And just one final scripture on this. Be angry, Paul speaking to the Ephesians, and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. Don't retain hurt feelings. Try to resolve whatever issue it is before you go to bed. Of course, there are some things that are so major they can't be resolved in just one day, but to the extent we can resolve them or address them, it's better to do it. Otherwise, our bodies will pay a price later on. You hold enough things in your life and in your body, and sometime down the road, the body is going to rebel. Try to resolve these things before you go to bed. Next question, do I try to make the best of things no matter what happens without ever complaining? Do I try to make the best of things no matter what happens without ever complaining? You know, there's a time to complain if it's warranted. We've all heard the expressions, what's eating you? Well, we see events happen on TV with unrelenting frequency where someone who's normally quiet and reticent suddenly flips a switch and then empties a gun or multiple guns into a classroom, a workplace, a movie theater, or a mall. And a number of friends, coworkers, and in many cases, total strangers are the recipient of an unexpected attack. That can illustrate the end result that may be triggered because those people held their grievances in too long until they explode in violence. Or absent that scenario, later on in life, they have certain illnesses or certain problems because their body and the internal organs were being pressured and being exposed to the wrong emotions, and that finally has an effect of breaking them down. So there's a time to complain and not hold everything in when we've been wrong. We need to focus on the goal that was expressed by Paul, where he said he said in Philippians 4, verse 11, not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. But it said he had to learn it. It's not something that comes naturally. Well, we need to focus on that goal, but we can and should legitimately complain to correct the wrongdoing if we're aware of it. Here's the next question. Do I have a variety of interests and pleasures in life, or are all of my energies focused on one relationship? Can be my work, my spouse, my children, so that if I lost that relationship, I would no longer have any reason to live. Do I have a variety of interests so that if I lost someone, it wouldn't destroy me? Dr. Lee Shan then followed with this comment. For example, if I have to retire, would I just as well die? My brother-in-law, Dean, had been working in the lumber industry for a number of years. He was a foreman at a mill over in Port Angeles. And right after the feast, he died. He had been separated 6 months prior to that. He was 70, and they gave him a severance package, But my wife, Veronica, was with his widow this past weekend, and she found out something for the first time, that when that happened, he just became morose and sullen and withdrawn. He wouldn't respond to his wife, to his children, and he got worse and worse. And finally, with that kind of situation, I don't know when he was exposed to COVID, but it got so bad that they put him on life support. And I've never forgotten this, because a doctor, in talking to his widow, and my wife Veronica was over there at the same time, he had tears running down his eyes, and he said, "Please, please, whatever you do, tell your friends and relatives to get vaccinated," because he was seeing a repeat and a repetition of the same type of thing, and it just really affected him. But anyway, that was what happened. He only had that one interest. He was a workaholic, and you have that, and it's taken away, it can destroy you. Anyway, we need to strive to have a balance in our lives. That is one thing that's stressed, particularly when it comes to anyone responsible as a caregiver, because you can get burned out, as was demonstrated when the COVID epidemic was at its peak, and there was no respite for the doctors and nurses because of the enormous caseloads and lack of help. So what does a balanced life as a Christian look like after we focus on the nucleus or main goal of seeking God's kingdom? Well, if we do a broad brush, we could look at the commandments and easily say we can find ways to honor our parents or our mom and dad. We could spend more time with our spouse or our children. We could be more diligent at work. We could play harder when we played, and the kids gave us a good example of that. Well, we can look at that and think, yeah, that's all right. There's nothing wrong with doing that, and as a balance, or pursue a hobby or do something that captures our interest and we enjoy doing. Once again, the goal is to strive for a balance in all of these things. We need to be careful not to sacrifice any one of them, because they are all important. The way we can do that is to be sure we don't concentrate solely in one area to the exclusion of the rest. Here's another question. Do I think of myself as a lovable, worthwhile person, or have I felt worthless much of the time? Do I think of myself as a lovable person or worthwhile, and lovable, worthwhile person, or have I felt worthless much of the time? You know, in the past several years, COVID has created an environment where it's easy for us to feel rejected, isolated, or lonely, and separated from other people. Turn to Romans 8, verse 35. Romans 8, verse 35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, or sword? Well, the only thing that I can see in that scripture that affects me directly is distress. I mean, that can come in many ways, the rest of those things. You know, we can be thankful we live in the U.S. because some of these other things go on in third world countries, and of course are going on in the Ukraine right at this, you know, time. We may have a secondary fear of what may loom in the future because of prophetic events. I mean, that's kind of always in the back of our mind, but realistically, that the most, for the most part, all we do is suffer from distress, regardless of the origin. Mr. Slocum asked us to fast a day this week, and I decided I better do it early, since I didn't want to be working on this message and trying to fast at the same time at the last minute. Sometime shortly on the day after I ended the fast, I received a phone call. I was actually taking a nap when my wife came in and woke me up and handed me the phone and told me who was calling. And when I heard the person's name, I had this feeling of dread, because I had very strong feelings regarding a certain issue and wasn't looking forward to talking to her. Coupled with that was the fact I just awakened from a sound sleep and was still groggy and trying to wake up, and I think you can all identify with that type of thing. However, it turned out to be very productive, and we got quite a few things settled that had been pending since the first of the year. All of us were fasting. When I say all of us, I mean all of us in the church were fasting for a different reason. I wasn't fasting for that particular thing. But as a side benefit, it worked out that that was resolved. And I wasn't fasting for that. But that's what happens. When we move closer to God, we're often rewarded in unexpected ways. Am I doing what I want to do with my life? Are my relationships satisfying? Another question. Am I doing what I want to do with my life? Are my relationships satisfying? Do we feel reasonably optimistic or quite hopeless about ever fulfilling our potential? In Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24, it says, "There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor." That pretty well describes the essence of our lives. If we're able to have food and clothing, and if we enjoy what we're doing, you know, what more can you ask for? He said, continuing, "This also I saw that it was from the hand of God." You know, do we get out of bed every morning and can hardly wait to get to work because we love it so much? I don't know. You know, you have to answer that question. Or do you hit the snooze button 4 or 5 times and hope that you can stay in the rest of the day? I'm going to combine the last two questions because they're very similar in nature. If I were told right now that I had only 6 months to live, would I go on doing what I'm doing right now? Or do I have secret unfulfilled dreams, ambitions, desires of which I'm ashamed and which have plagued me all my life? And the other question as part of that, if I were told I had a terminal illness, would I experience some sense of relief? Dr. Lishan cited a case of a woman who was told by her doctor that her cancer was so far advanced that she had only about a year to live. Since she was a widow who had no children and no close relatives, the doctor asked her if there was something or anything that she had always wanted to do, but for whatever reason had not done. And she said she'd always wanted to take a cruise around the world on a cruise ship. So since she was ambulatory and not bedridden, he said, suggested, take all your savings, get the best cruise you can afford, you know, so there's no reason to save the money. So she took the longest and most luxurious trip she could find, and during that cruise, her health had a remarkable improvement. She went to see the doctor when she got back and was told that the cancer was in total remission. However, now she was practically penniless and furious at the doctor for getting her in that fix. But he helped her find a job, and for the next 10 years, she traveled all over the world, sending him postcards from many exotic places. I wouldn't suggest that any of you do the same thing, because there's no guarantee that the results would be the same. But that story had a very happy ending. And even if she died at the end of the year, she still would have had a wonderful time during the remaining months of her life. She told herself that her life mattered to her and decided to do something different, and as a result, took some control over her life. A number of years ago, I went to visit a new client in her home for the first time, and after talking to her for a little while and leaving, I thought, Because all she did was unload on me all the things that had gone wrong with her life, and some of them attributable to a couple of ex-husbands. And after talking to her, I could understand why perhaps they were ex. She was very bitter about a number of things. And I thought, you know, she's not going to be around too long if she doesn't make a dramatic change in her attitude. And sure enough, a couple of years later, she died. In contrast to that, I met another client after her husband had died. She was 88 years old and still driving an old Studebaker. You know, they went out of production in 1966, and some of you young people, probably that's a foreign word. But anyway, she came from a different era. She was like a queen. Just the way she looked and the way she carried herself. We became good friends, and a number of times I invited her to spend the weekend with us. I'd pick her up Friday night, take her home, and return her Monday morning. And my children still talk about Grandma, who always brought them boxes with little donuts, and they always liked that. She was always upbeat and positive. She was lonely because her only daughter lived in Connecticut and only was able to get out and see her once a year. One day I was at work and I got to thinking, you know, I haven't seen her for a while. And so I called her and asked if she was up for a visit. By then she'd moved from her home in Laurelhurst to a retirement home. And she told me she was recovering from a bad cold. That was the only time that I ever remember feeling something like a premonition. I thought, I need to get out there and see her. So I did. She was sitting up prim and proper in her chair, but her voice was quiet and more of a whisper. She didn't get up from her chair to meet me or get up when I left, since she was still very weak from her cold. The next day, I got a call from someone at the retirement home telling me that she had just died. She was only a few weeks short of her 103rd birthday. She wasn't a church member, but she had always been an outstanding example to me. She never spoke badly about anyone. Her life stood in stark contrast to the first lady I described. Well, I think we all understand that while this book was focused on cancer patients, all of these questions could be addressed to anyone suffering from any physical or emotional ailment or disease. That certainly is because we've all heard repeatedly, and you don't have to turn there, in Proverbs, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. We should continue to examine ourselves throughout the year, perhaps asking ourselves some of these same questions Dr. LeShan asked in his book. They may not be applicable now, but they could be at some time in the years ahead. They may enable us to make corrections and changes in our lives. Those changes may be instrumental in helping us to enjoy the full life that our Father designed for us while we're here on earth. And they also can serve to help us prepare for a wonderful future that's mapped out for us, beginning with the spring holy days we are about to observe next week.